Baker McKenzie welcomes you to TMT Talk, the global TMT podcast series, focusing on sector-specific issues that are impactful on players in the technology, media, and telecoms industry.
Hello, and welcome to Baker McKenzie Global TMT podcast series. My name is Raffaele Giarda. I am a transactional partner with Baker McKenzie in Rome, and I have the privilege of leading the global technology, media, and telecoms industry group of the firm. Let me start by providing some background for this episode. This year, we launched the latest edition of our flagship publication, TMT Looking Ahead, where we present themes, discuss insights, and provide recommendations for the TMT sector in a five-part series. We have recently published the report on tech M&A, which offers cross-practice and cross-regional perspectives around the drivers of the M&A activity in the technology arena. And specifically in this report, we have asked our experts to provide their insights on the tech M&A trends that we should be expecting in 2022 and beyond. So the acquisition of intellectual property as a driver for tech M&A, for example, or how an evolving international tax landscape will affect due diligence and post-acquisition integration planning, or what's on the horizon of the new foreign direct investment regimes. And today, this will be the topic we will be discussing, the developments around special purposes acquisition companies, so-called SPACs, and the SPAC transactions trajectory nuances across the globe and the impact of regulatory headwinds. Now, to do so, two of our most experienced colleagues in the TMT industry have kindly agreed to join us today. So allow me to introduce Adam Farlow and Ivy Wong. Adam Farlow is a dual qualified US and English securities lawyer, a Baker McKenzie partner based in the firm's London office, who helps to run our capital markets practice globally. Adam focuses on offerings of international debt, equity, and other forms of financing involving companies, investors, major financial institutions, and trustees, as well as all forms of restructuring and liability management for debtors, creditors, trustees, and dealer managers. Ivy Wong is a Hong Kong, English, and New York qualified lawyer, a Baker McKenzie partner based in the firm's Hong Kong office, whose practice focuses on IPOs, securities offerings, corporate finance, mergers and acquisitions, compliance, and general corporate work. Ivy has led many unprecedented and high-profile securities offerings and cross-border transactions, including many successful listings that are first of their kind on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange. So thank you very much, Adam and Ivy, for being with us today.
Thank you so much for hosting this podcast.
It's really our pleasure. Thanks very much.
Wonderful. So let's get started with a first question. If we can commence by giving a look at your experience, Ivy, can you tell us about a SPAC and what is it exactly?
Sure. SPAC has really been a very hot topic over the last few years, and we are hearing a lot of SPACs, de-SPACs, and all the terminology. So today, I'm really glad to share a little bit more about like the latest developments and some of the terminologies and also some of the observations in the market. To put long story short, SPAC refers to Special Purpose Acquisition Company, which is in essence a company that is listed as a shell, or sometimes we call it blank check company, for fundraising exercise. Upon the completion of the fund exercise, in somewhat like 2 to 3 years' time, depending on the jurisdiction, some jurisdictions, like we're talking about 24, within 24 months, some of the other jurisdictions, we might be looking at sometime within 36 months to identify a target as well as acquiring the target. And upon completion of that target, which we called de-SPAC transaction, it effectively achieved the listing of the target on the chosen stock exchange. So it is an interesting regime, which is quite different from the traditional sense where you rely on track record of 3 years or more of the financial performance of the target company but we're actually looking ahead when it comes to SPACs, is to raise funds first and then to acquire the target. So it's quite different in that sense. There are really two steps in the process. There's one listing for the SPAC itself. And secondly, there is the second step, which is to list the target itself. And it's by way of business combination.
Very interesting, Ivy. Thank you very much. And very helpful to understand better what this is all about. So if I can turn to you, Adam, it feels like a recent phenomenon, but how long have they been around? And why, if that is the case, did they take off recently?
Hi, Rafael. Indeed, blank check companies, as they could be construed, have been around a long time in the United States, where they originated. They started to take off properly around 15 years ago with some U.S. Rule changes at the U.S. Exchanges in 2008 that made listing there more practicable. Traditionally, it has been a U.S. product, although there have been some U.K. specs, a few year in and year out. They averaged globally a total of somewhere between 10 and let's call it 100 SPACs a year, mostly towards the lower end of that number, and raising maybe $10 or $15 billion a year, year in and year out for that last 15-year period. But in 20 and 21, the market took off dramatically and perhaps aberrationally. In 2020, over $80 billion was raised in SPACs in the U.S. alone. And then again in 21, that number doubled again to $160 billion and accounted for more than half of all deals in what was otherwise still an incredibly busy market. I might point out, just thinking about the size of that number, it's created a huge amount of dry powder to be used for de-SPACs, roughly $90 billion of acquisition currency created over the last 12 to 18 months, much of which is targeted at TMT clients, which is why we're speaking, right? Roughly half of it is TMT focused. We've seen growth, although it started in the U.S., in my part of the world, in Amsterdam. The U.K. was reasonably slow to adopt some changes and so lost traction. But other jurisdictions have adopted rules and are chasing markets for SPAC IPOs, Stockholm, Switzerland, Dubai, and a few others in my part of the world. Why it occurred is in many ways anybody's guess. We had a very different, we had a very busy year for mainstream non-SPAC IPOs, but it did capture the imagination.
Wonderful. Thank you, Adam, because it's interesting. It's also good to understand where it all started. But Ivy, in fact, I wanted to return to your experience and understanding what was actually and currently happening in the Asia-Pacific markets and why.
Sure. It's quite interesting because in contrast from what's happening in the US and in Europe for Hong Kong and Singapore being the two major exchanges in Asia-Pacific, the SPAC regime really just came into effect very recently. We're talking about in case of Hong Kong, say, for example, the new SPAC regime came into effect at the beginning of this year in 2022. Shortly after the consultation paper was issued in September 2021. So it's really 3 months apart. It's kind of like a little bit of a mad rush, like, you know, after the US focus on SPACs and for Hong Kong, like, you know, it created this SPAC regime, like just to tap into that market, really. For Singapore, it's a little bit ahead of Hong Kong in a sense that it came into effect in September 2021, so which is just a few months ahead of Hong Kong. And if we are looking more broadly at Asia Pacific in the other jurisdictions, Malaysia also has a SPAC regime, although it didn't quite get the momentum that it hoped for. And with the rest of the other jurisdictions in the region, there hasn't yet a new SPAC regime. For example, Thailand, Australia, or Indonesia, there had been some queries or interest as to whether or not they would adopt a SPAC regime. But so far, we haven't seen any in those jurisdictions. But I think the positive note is, regardless of whether or not there is a SPAC regime in place, we are certainly seeing a lot of many potential de-SPAC opportunities because, like, you know, there are a lot of dry powder, as Adam has mentioned. That after the hypes of about 2-3 years, like, you know, in the US, there are just a lot of proceeds that need to be deployed over the sort of like 2-3 years time, as I mentioned earlier on, which then, you know, heads to the de-SPAC stage. And we're seeing a lot happening, like, you know, in Asia Pacific in terms of de-SPACs.
Excellent. Thank you, Ivy. That's really interesting. And it prompts the question to Adam, what's happening currently in the US and the European markets from your perspective, Adam, and why?
Well, across both the US and Europe, we've seen a very, very significant decrease in SPAC IPOs. Number of reasons. One is that the equity capital markets more broadly are locked up, partly driven by volatility, driven by the Russian invasion of Ukraine, the recession, the increase in interest rates. That has hindered both the IPO issuance rate as well as the inability to fund acquisitions via PIPEs, which are a private investment in public equity. So in the context of a de-SPAC, there is usually a pipe that is done to help fund some of that acquisition. And the pipe market itself is very tight on both sides of the Atlantic. Founder expectations for those that want to launch pipes or launch SPACs is significantly off of what perhaps the public market is willing to accept. We've seen relatively limited de-SPACs. So despite the large numbers of new money IPOs that were conducted, there are less than 200 de-SPACs in 2021 globally, and less than 40 so far in 2022. Some of those have not been great de-SPACs. Over half of the SPACs that have de-SPACed have then traded down more than 40%, so significantly worse than the market as a whole. And then there have been a number of regulatory changes and regulatory proposals that we can come back to that have been very problematic, including those from the SEC. So as a result, we have a huge backlog of SPACs. Someone would reasonably estimate something like 600 SPACs that want to go that have not IPO'd, roughly 150 SPACs in registration currently in the US, 600 that are seeking a business combination and haven't closed. So the market is broadly locked up for new money IPOs across Europe and the US, and there's a very significant backlog of business combinations that haven't yet closed in this part of the world.
Thank you, Adam. This is very, very interesting. And I would say it also provides a good perspective on what's going on in the US and Europe. And if we can remain focused one more second on such perspective, I'd be also interested in understanding what the point of view is from the Asia Pacific angle. What's happening from a regulatory perspective? What is the market experiencing as a result of the evolution on the regulatory front?
Sure. Perhaps I'll talk a little bit about the regulatory landscape in Asia Pacific. Given SPACs are essentially shell company raising funds with forward-looking aspirations, right, without like a track record, there's a big focus on investors in interest and protection on the part of the regulators in Asia Pacific. Especially the case, it's because the class action, it's not available. The class action regime isn't available, like in Hong Kong, say, for example, nor in Singapore. So we are really seeing the regulators adopting listing requirements, like the basic listing requirements and suitability tests, like which need to be satisfied by the underlying target at the de-SPAC process. And on top of that, there are obviously enhanced protection measures as well, including sort of no retail offering at the stage of the initial SPAC listing. There may be minimum board lot size, minimum fundraising size. There needs to be escrow agent, a professional and qualified escrow agent handling 100% of the gross proceeds, say, for example. It also requires institutional investors' participation at the time of SPAC as well as de-SPAC. So all those are very interesting sort of enhanced new measures, which you otherwise wouldn't see like in traditional IPOs. But I think on the flip side, the interesting thing about these like SPAC new regime or structure is that it does allow sort of issue of detachable warrants, which can give the investors potential upside and also redemption option for the investors at the time of de-SPACs, just to give them an option to stay, if they like the de-SPAC target, they could leave and reap whatever gains that they have at the time if they don't like the de-SPAC target. So far, I think, just a little bit on the data, right? We have two listed SPACs in Hong Kong and 9 pending ones in the first 6 months of 2022. They're all like sort of TMT focused, except just one or two, which are in the consumer sector. But all the rest are really focusing on new economy like green tech, smart cars, fintech, biotech, healthcare, and life sciences, primarily in the Greater China region, but more broadly in Asia Pacific as well. In case of Singapore, three have been listed, and they're all tech focused industry in Asia Pacific. So I think it's interesting to see, how the de-SPAC process has evolved, and also the industry focus that it has when it comes to SPAC listings. We are also seeing sort of some of the investors wanting to rely on professional promoters' expertise and institutional investors' expertise, when they come to investing into SPACs which have like a TMT focus, because that tends to require some expertise in that space. So I think one other observations perhaps I would share from the Asia Pac perspective is that for Chinese issuers, there remains a close connection with the Hong Kong Stock Exchange due to partly, I think, their geographical and market proximity, but also the accessibility to offshore funds, which otherwise wouldn't be available in China.
Excellent, Ivy. Thank you so much. This looks very interesting and also very, I would say, in-depth analysis. Adam, if we perhaps can close off with what's happening from the regulatory perspective in the US and European markets, that this could also provide us with a glimpse of that part of the globe.
Great, very happy to. So the US in the SEC earlier this year in March made a number of proposals around SPACs, greatly increasing the potential for underwriter liability in the context of the de-SPAC, which has many of the investment banks very focused on the issue. I think more broadly, probably the most important change will be around restricting the use of forward-looking statements. So one of the key points in the context of the growth of the SPAC market was the was the argument that SPACs would be able to put forward-looking information and forecasts into the market earlier as part of a de-SPAC process rather than as part of an IPO. They're just different rules that relate to already existing companies versus IPOs as it relates to forward-looking information. The SEC has made it more difficult and more risky to include this forward-looking information. That proposal is still in the works. It has not been adopted. Comments have just closed with respect to those proposals. I think until we have better clarity, certainly the new money market will continue to be restricted. De-SPACs are continuing to happen, but with trepidation by market participants. In Europe, we are continuing to see de-SPACs happen because, of course, the SEC rules don't have a direct impact here for European-listed SPACs. Although I think everyone expects that what happens in Europe will track much of what's been proposed in the U.S. should it get adopted. So we're going to see a lot of change in the de-SPAC market here in Europe as well.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Adam. Well, time flies, and it would be lovely to be here and understand even more around this entire new sector. But we also have to close on our conversation. It has been incredibly helpful, very compelling. I can't thank you enough, Ivy and Adam. Perhaps what we can probably gather from this most interesting conversation is what the trajectory of SPACs and de-SPACs is in a sort of what you have depicted incredibly well as an ideal line, if you wish, covering both dimensions of time and space, including SPACs and de-SPACs transaction nuances across the globe and the impact of the regulatory evolutions, most of all why this is relevant to the TMT industry. So many thanks again for such an impressive discussion to Adam Farlow, Baker McKenzie TMT partner in London, and to Ivy Wong, Baker McKenzie TMT partner in Hong Kong. It was really great having you both with us today.
Very much our pleasure. Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Ali.
Thank you. Thank you both. And thanks so much to our audience for listening to this conversation. So stay tuned for the next episode. Be well, keep safe, and as we would say, arrivederci.